Continuing the summary of Christian Science practice in Science and Health from page 424.
We were thinking when the tape ran out about the divine providence in which nothing accidental ever happens. And as we come down that page 424 to line 16, we see that this is the true mind, this divinely all-knowing, all-providing parent mind that surrounds the patient instead of many conflicting minds, in italics, in the plural. The mind that removes every obstacle on line 21. All mortal obstetrics of personal birth giving that makes us stumble and fall and so on, so that in terms of this one mind we can be alone with God and the sick when treating disease. Down there, line 25, alone meaning all one. And so the text gives us there the oneness and allness of divine love. Alone, all one, the oneness and allness of divine love. So on the last paragraph there, we have what would appear to be certainly the false providence being provided with hereditary diseases such as scrofulous diathesis or a humor in the blood transmitted, line 30, biologically by means of what today would be called the genetic DNA code. None of that has anything to do with the divine providence. Hence, mind, the true parent, the true provider, nothing accidental, that which is all-knowing, all-foreknowing, that removes scrofula in the marginal heading. The word humor in old physiology is about bile, lymph, or blood, conceived of as determining a person's temperament and moods. So that a humor in the blood as matter, line 32, would be the subjective state of the mental qualities of the temperament and would be inherited through a long line of progenitors as we turn over to 425. The word humors from a root meaning moisture, humid. Supposed, says the text on line 4, as being safety valves. Well, safety valves, yes, for letting off temperamental steam. When people, so the saying goes, blow their top. Safety valves. But no inherited consumption. No such provision as far as the divine mind is concerned, as truth is concerned. So don't devour, don't be consumed by all these temperamental fires. Then no inflammation, firstly, no tubercle, secondly, no hemorrhage, thirdly, no decomposition, fourthly. All these are images of mortal thought superimposed on the body, says the text on line 10 and 11. And instead of that, the mind of the body, the mind and body of the Word, in which there's no argument, no inflammation, the Christ in which no tubercles form, Christianity in which there's no hemorrhage discharge, and science in which there is no decomposition. And then, in the margin, lungs reformed. And note how lovely the terms are spirit and life, because of course the word spirit is from spirare, to breathe. When spirit, the all in all, line 20, is our very breath of life, then there is nothing being consumed. So we're bidden, line 24, to conquer faith in matter, and then consciousness will construct a better body. Consciousness will construct a better body. Correct material belief with spiritual understanding, and spirit will form us anew. Isn't that wonderful? Because the whole controls every one of its own portions, no part of the whole can act or does act independently of the whole. No single portion of the body, lines 27, 28, for example, the heart can destroy us. Don't believe, therefore, in heredity. Don't allow belief in heredity at the bottom of the page to deprive you of sound and capacious lungs. Let's get our breath fresh from its source in spirit and in life. Well, now, 426 says the text that the great thing is always to have the high goal, line 6, of Christian Science before our thought, instead of counting our footsteps in endeavoring to reach this goal. Because if we do, then we shall work out our own salvation. Line 16, what we need to desire is the destination itself, to expect the destination in order to make speedy progress, on line 9, to the destination. And what is this high goal, the destination itself? Well, it's the very tree of life. It's no death. And in this way, we will quicken into newness of life, which really means, of course, that we'll be born again. Understanding that disease cannot destroy life, line 17, that death does not free us from sin and sickness, line 18, we shall renew our energies and endeavors free from hypocrisy. That's marvelous. 14 to 15. Having neither a desire to die nor a dread of the grave, line 20, will destroy the great fear that besets mortal existence. Because the great fear of mortals is, of course, the fear of death. And once this one great fear is destroyed, all other lesser fears begin to be destroyed along with it, or are destroyed along with it. So relinquishing all faith in death, line 23, ceasing to fear the sting of death, which is sin, of course, having unflinching faith in life eternal, will raise the standard of health and morals and hold aloft the banner of Christianity. Why Christianity? Because what Christianity truly is life deathless for all mankind. lines 28 to 29, because sin brings death, death disappears only in proportion as sin disappears. Man is immortal, God is his life, therefore no death. Body as matter, no death either, for matter has no life to surrender. Down to line 31, human concepts are all that die. Matter, death, disease, sickness, sin are human concepts only. Sin brought death, line 28. But obviously it is organic birth that really brings organic death. And if organic birth is man supposedly separated from God, then this is the sin that brings death. Hence the need to be born again in order for there to be no death. 427, where life, this life that we're now talking about, is the law of soul, lines 2 and 3. Meaning to say, of course, that life is changeless, life sinless, therefore deathless. The law of soul in respect of life is life's sameness with itself, the law of life's unchanging identity, the law of soul's indivisibility. It's non-divisibility into souls or spirits. Hence, it's the law of the spirit, uncapitalized, of truth, lines 3 and 4, which is the law of man as the very quality, the spirit of truth's own wholeness and unfragmentability. Man as the spirit of truth is man as the representative of soul. Soul, never without its representative, is truth, never without its spirit. So man's individual being, line 5, as deathless as his soul is deathless. This wonderful deathless soul of ours. Man as immortal as his soul is immortal. Both being a state of consciousness, neither can disappear in unconsciousness. Man identically the same individual, that means indivisible being, lines 16 to 17, after as before a bone is broken or the body guillotined. Our body cannot be severed from its head. This is the truth of being, untouched. So that, coming down to line 20, in the tenor, which is the continuous course of the word of life, death is the last enemy that shall be destroyed. And the result, resurrection. Total rebirth. Christian Science proved absolute, that is, proved birthless, deathless. It never began in the year 1866. it's eternal. No existence outside of God. No more sin, therefore, no more ignorance of what God is, line 22, but instead the knowledge of life, truth, and love making man undying, man made undying by life, truth, and love. See, the Word, what I, God, am. I, immortal mind, line 23, know myself to be life, truth, and love. And that there are not two realms of consciousness, one physical, the other spiritual. I know there is just one indivisible plane of all identity and consciousness. So there being no material birth and no material death, spirit, and line 25, is thus the first, the last, and the only. And this is resurrection, therefore, in which thought awakens, 30 to 31, from the dream of the cycle of birth, death. Man, the very trumpet word uncapitalized, of truth. Truth's own trumpet word, that's man. That is to say, of the Word itself, declaring, I am not dead. Man, therefore, declaring, I am not dead. I'm ever active life. 428, in which there's no inaction, diseased action, overaction, or reaction. So coming down to line 4, why don't we demonstrate the facts of sinless soul in Jesus' way and prove that life is real and death the illusion? Why don't we keep the words of our Master and never see death? Line 8. I proceeded forth and came from God, Jesus said. That which comes from God never sees death because it keeps the whole word of life. And so it sees only life. But if it allowed the word of life to be cut up into disconnected fragments, it would indeed see death, because that's what death is. But keeping the one whole word of life, it sees only life. It does not break the word of life up into detached sentences and clauses that appear contradictory, as is forbidden at the beginning of the 11th chapter, because thereby it would see death. So let's begin to establish in truth. Truth uncapitalized, that means to say, In the Bible idiom, on earth, in truth, on earth, the temple or body, this glorious matrix structure of the holy city represented by the textbook, whose builder and maker is God. 9:14. God was the textbook's author.
Mrs. Eddy said, and knew to be so. Well, then, no unknown God, ignorantly worshipped, lines 15 to 16, but God known as the eternal builder, the everlasting Father, unimpairable, indestructible life. Because in this lies mental might. 19 to 20, that offsets and replaces human misconceptions with spiritual life. How wonderful that this is man's present immortality in the margin there. He is, not shall be, perfect and immortal, line 23. He is the forever consciousness of existence. What we are is Christ and Christian Science. 25 to 26. Man and woman, one in God. And of course, it's this that masters sin and death. Man and woman, one in God, head and body never guillotined. So at the bottom there, understanding God in this way as the only absolute life raises the dying to life and health. 429, to understand that there is no death, and so bring to light omnipotent and eternal life, is one of the graces of spirit. Line 4. Grace from gratis, meaning freely given, gratitude. In this work, therefore, we can begin gratefully, graciously, with what the text here calls the more simple demonstrations of control, and thereby we shall accomplish in time the final demonstration. Line 6. But in order to do this, we must keep the high goal, which we were told about back there, where was it, on page 426, always before our thought, looking beyond a single step in the line of spiritual advancement. 9:10. So that in science, man, body, is subject to mind. According to mortal mind, mind is subordinate to body, that can die and decompose. Line 15. But this isn't true. 16. The clay cannot reply to the potter. Marginal heading. Body being subject to mind, mortals wake from the dream of death, still with mortal bodies. But those who believe they bury a corpse don't see them because of this belief. So there is continuity of existence. In the marginal heading, line 21, man exists before the material organization began, he exists after the body is disintegrated. He is untouched by the dream of birth, death. His life, capitalized line 22, never having had a beginning, it can never have an ending. So let's have faith in, let's understand, not some, but all the sayings, that is, the words of our Master, and 27, none of which are ever detached from the one word of life. And in that case, life, never having been deranged, disarranged, discomposed, it's without sin, disease, or death. So it's repeated. If a man keep my saying, he shall never see death, line 32. If any of one of Jesus' words were detached from the context of the one whole word of life, that utterance would be personal and not truth itself uttering its own science. Of course, with Jesus and with Christian Science, with Science and Health, that is never so. Now over to 4:30, because all the phenomena of existence are, of course, all the life experiences that lead up to and ultimate in the final overcoming of death. Immortal man, line 5. The Christ ideal that appears in proportion as mortal mind parts with error. So give up belief in death and advance towards life and love. Line 9. Because we do this in proportion that our individuality, life, becomes truly universal love. That is, in the measure that it reflects what is universally indivisible. And this is mankind in science awakening to the great fact of life. Line 12. And so we come to the illustration itself of the second main part of the chapter that began back there on page 410, called Mental Treatment Illustrated. We come to the famous court case. Now, how interesting, how instructive that this case was part of the Christian Science textbook right from its first edition, which appeared in 1875, to its 48th edition that appeared in 1891. Now, there wasn't, for some reason or other, a 49th edition, and the case was taken out of the textbook from the 50th edition in 1891 and remained out until the 81st edition in 1894. Then, in the second edition in 1894, it was returned and remained where it is until the final edition in 1910. In other words, it was out during the period when there was no central church or college organization, because both were dissolved in 1889. But it was returned when the new Mother Church organization had been instituted and its material edifice had been built. Now, it's an allegory. It's an allegory, the purpose of which is to illustrate the silencing of personal sense and therefore of false belief in mortal man, leaving him spiritually self-governed. Because governed subjectively by divine principle instead of objectively by an outside maternal organization. And therefore, material organization, a matter body governing and controlling objectively, involuntarily, and personal sense, the sense of being a mediatorial persona through which either good or evil can sound, must surely be the same thing. Because back of such a situation lies the false belief of conscious, voluntary mind and of unconscious, involuntary matter body acting independently of each other. Just naturally brings the whole Christian Science Practice chapter to its conclusion. So different in idiom, of course, from anything else in the textbook. So let's just examine it a little, because it's the story of how mortal man has contracted liver complaint while ministering to the needs of a sick friend. And that means that he undergoes two trials. The first one in the court of error, so-called, where he has no proper defense. And so he's sentenced to death. Now that's mental malpractice at work. And the second trial in the court of spirit, where he is defended and set free by Christian Science. That, of course, is Christian Science practice at work. Now, instead of loving a sick friend as himself, whereby he himself gets sick, mortal man learns to love his truly healthy friend, Christ, truth, the spirit of life, as the text puts it in a moment, as himself. And this heals his sickness, of course it does. You see, although he is mentally and morally without sin, consciously, voluntarily, he loves his neighbor as himself. In spite of that, he's attacked physically at night keeps on telling us at night, with sickness, that is, unconsciously, involuntarily. You see, his sense of himself is a mental and bodily persona, same as the word mask, through which both good and evil are capable of sounding. Ignorantly subscribing to the mortal mind, belief that his matter body operates of itself independently of his mortal mind, he doesn't know how to govern his body. His conscious, voluntary mentality is unconscious of the involuntary workings of the body, and so he believes he can't control it. Now, ministering to his sick friend, he breaks matter's so-called health laws, and as a result, he contracts liver complaint, is dubbed a criminal, sent to prison, and brought to trial. His personal sense of self complains about his physical condition. That is to say, mortal man is the defendant in this trial against his own personal sense as the plaintiff. And his personal sense, acting through his own false belief, who is personal sense's attorney, furnishes the testimony of all these different false witnesses. But 12 mortal minds, we learn a little later on in the text, constitute the jury. Now, what would these 12 mortal minds be? 12 is always a symbol of the circle, something universal. It must be world belief, surely, in the validity of matter's health laws. Don't you think? Well, it's Judge Medicin who presides. And so the first trial is described as taking place in the court of error. And the first and principal witness, we're now page 430 at the bottom, line 29, which is health laws, claiming to have been personally abused while mortal man was performing his good deeds. Personal, personal, personal. Mortal man as a voluntary, conscious do-gooder, on a personally moral basis, makes it possible for evil to assail him involuntarily, unconsciously, on a personally physical basis. Because the liver complaint develops at night, that is, involuntarily, unconsciously, appearing consciously by day in the form of bodily sickness. His personal sense of himself as a combined material mind and material body complains about this. That's the plaintiff. And his need is for Christian Science to come and instruct him in what he is as immortal man, making him a law to himself that such mental malpractice cannot, in fact, harm him either by night or by day. He must learn how consciously to govern his body by ceasing to believe that matter can suffer and report disease independently of his so-called conscious mind. You see, the word liver is from the same root as live, And that's why the issue is between life and death, as the preceding few pages have told us. So these health laws, being disobeyed, that is, abused, they act as a sort of state or body police force. They arrest mortal man on criminal charges and put him into prison. Physiology, materia medica, hypnotism struggle to help him, while all the time subscribing to the validity of these very laws. Now comes the second witness, 431, line 21, coated tongue. Mortal man's tongue has become coated at night, that is, unconsciously, involuntarily, with a foul fur about which his personal sense of himself again complains. The belief is that morbid secretion at work in his body has hypnotized his mind, making him despondent, and this has produced a coated tongue. The liver, you see, is man's, from the physiology point of view, man's largest glandular, that is, secreting organ. And what it secretes is bile. And the bile that it secretes can either be yellow bile, called choler, or black bile, called melancholy. And these become humours in the blood, producing despondency, ill humour, bad temper, biliousness, and so on. In old physiology, these humours were conceived of as entering into the body's constitution and determining a person's health and temperament. Well, of course, it has to be vice versa in metaphysics. In metaphysics, the mental temperament determines the way that the liver, the blood, the humours behave, not the other way around. So don't let morbid secrets be part of man's life, part of his liver. As then, when it's understood that mind and body are not two separate entities, bodily secretions will then be pure and healthy, and the mental temperament will be moderate, will be balanced, happy, whole, and of course the body will be like it, like them. So the third witness on line 25 is sallow skin. Again, involuntarily, unconsciously, mortal man's skin has, since the night of the liver attack, become dry, hot, chilled, unhealthy, unsightly, robbed of its normal good looks. And about this again, personal sense, acting through false belief, complains. Skin affections arise in belief from this same morbid state of the blood, that is, from ill humours in the bloodstream. But it's not really the bloodstream, it's the temperament. Well, the fourth witness, over to 432, line 1, the fourth witness is nerve, the state commissioner. Nerve claims to be the state, that is to say, the body commissioner. Commissioner, from the Latin, mittere, to send. State commissioner for mortal man. Nerve, as the medium through which his brain purports to send messages of sensation in matter over his entire body is, of course, intimately acquainted with personal sense. His sense of being a mediumistic persona for good and evil. Nerve, like a talking serpent, is believed to report back to conscious mind the involuntary, unconscious, discordant bodily conditions of which personal sense complains. Now then the fifth witness, line 9, is governor mortality, governor of the province of body, the province of body, like the capital, head, the brain, governing the provincial body, province of body in which mortal man resides, is governed overall by mortality. That is, by the belief that body begins in birth and ends in death. Governor mortality decrees that he upon whose person disease is found shall be treated as a criminal and punished with death. It declares that man can become diseased in the act of doing good to his neighbor. Yet only sin merits punishment, and it's sin alone that ends in death. It's not sin to do good. We can always consciously refuse to sin and do good instead. And when doing good is put on an impersonal spiritual basis, as it must be, then instead of a physically moral basis, then there are no bad physical accompaniments. And so the sixth and last witness on line 21 is death. When health laws are disobeyed, they call in death. To disobey us is to die, they decree. Such is the justice of nature's so-called law, line 27, with which Materia Medica, so-called friend of mortal man, concurs, agreeing at once that the prisoner must die. Yet the law of God says, only if you sin will you die. Doing good is really life itself. So all this is testimony in behalf of personal sense, or the sense that mortal man is a mental and physical, conscious and unconscious persona, his mind acting consciously and voluntarily, while his body acts unconsciously, involuntarily, independently of his conscious mind. And we come to the end of personal senses testimony. And old Judge Medicine sums up the case, charging the jury to give the verdict. His conclusion is that laws of nature, the physiological laws of health, render disease homicidal, lines 6 and 7, page 433, and then this jury of 12 mortal minds, the world's acceptance of whatever medicine decrees are laws of nature, and therefore laws of health and disease, world acceptance. The only valid evidence, says the judge, is that of personal sense, not that of irrational, unchristian, Christian science. So the verdict is that mortal man is guilty not on one count, but on two counts. He's guilty, firstly, of benevolence in the first degree. The accent there would be on the voluntary, the mental, the good. And he's guilty of liver complaint in the first degree, where the accent would be involuntary, bodily, the evil. And the sentence is, torture him until he is dead. Remember what the second chapter of Genesis says, in the day that thou eatest of the tree of good and evil, this mortal mind and matter too, thou shalt surely die. That's what Jehovah is supposed to have said to mortal man. Well, in his cell, that is his sickbed, mortal man's frightened sense of life, God, is prepared by scholastic theology for death. What dies then? Isn't life. If it did, it would be God that dies. It's the frightened sense of life that dies. Well then, at the bottom of 433, Christian Science to the rescue. Line 31, Christ truth. The spirit, little s, of life, capital L, mortal man's well friend, whom he must love as his own well self, becomes his attorney, that is to say, his counsel, his advocate, his comforter. Think of Jesus, I will send you another comforter that he may abide with you forever. And Mrs. Eddy, this comforter I understand to be divine science, which reduced to human apprehension is named Christian Science. What he must love as his self is life's very own spirit, the very life, uncapitalized, of life, capitalized. Then the prison doors will be opened and the captive set free. Top of 434, it's divine love that is basically in command, and its verdict is that the prisoner is not guilty. Therefore, he shall not be executed. The law of Christ's truth supersedes all other so-called law. And therefore, trial number 2 begins to take place in the court of spirit before the bar of justice and eternal truth. Christian Science is now mortal man's attorney as the counter to false belief, who was personal senses attorney. Christian Science, overcoming false belief, is thus the means whereby mortal man overcomes personal sense. Christian Science, overcoming false belief, is the means whereby mortal man overcomes personal sense. So Christian Science's argument, its argument for the defense of mortal man begins. Christian Science being always absolute. Its argument is the elimination of argument, that is, of dualism, good and evil, mind here, matter there, unconscious, conscious, voluntary, involuntary, all that dualism. And Christian Science practice, Christian Science treatment in the second trial, therefore, makes nothing of mental malpractice in the first trial. Its purpose, it says, is to unearth a foul conspiracy against the liberty and life of man, and it annuls an unjust sentence passed in a tragic, morally illegal trial. The truly valid testimony, it says, contrary to that of personal sense, shows that the crime was never committed. Mortal man did not sin in doing good to his neighbor, and his body is governed by and constituted of these very acts of goodness. He's not made up of a conscious, voluntary mind and an unconscious, involuntary matter body. He's not, therefore, worthy of death or of bonds. We know how that quote there comes from Acts 23, don't we? And it was said of Paul when he was on trial before the Roman governor Felix. Paul, the apostle to the Gentiles, man in the generic sense, all mankind in Christianity. That's what's on trial. All mankind. Now, God has made man immortal, not mortal, says Christian Science. All there is to the mortal sense of him, therefore, is his eternal immortal reality answerable only to spirit. There's no such thing as an unconscious matter body acting independently of conscious mind. Man's mind is God, infinitely conscious, infinitely voluntary. My will is done, says God, infinitely conscious of its own perfect workings, as the perfect workings of its own body, mind and body one. Mrs. Eddy said, man hasn't got a body, mind, God has got a body, and that body is man. Now that mind is in control of its own body. So it's absurd, as we turn over to 435, to recommend man's immortal spirit to heavenly mercy, for this spirit is God himself, man's only lawmaker. Mortal mind, not body matter, is what sins and commits a crime. Conscious mortal mind, line 6, alone is capable of sin and suffering. It's false to believe that body suffers of sins. Only that which sins dies. Good deeds are not sin, therefore cannot die. This is the law of spirit. Laws of health, falsely believed in by personal sense, are of the nature of sin. And they are what should die, because they would destroy mortal man's life and liberty. The law of spirit is that mortal man can suffer and be punished only for sin. But in the present case, mortal man watched beside the couch of pain, exercised the love that was the fulfilling of the law, did unto others as he would that they should do unto him. These acts, being free of sin, fulfill Spirit's law of life. That is to say, when, of course, they are free from personal sense. The mesmerism was not conscious, voluntary sin meriting punishment, but unconscious, involuntary self-mesmerism based on mortal mind's ignorance of self, which acted as personal sense and false belief. Old Judge Medicine there, he sat to judge after the law and then commanded to be smitten contrary to the law. And that was said by the prisoner Paul, again in Acts 23, before the Jewish Sanhedrin. It was said to Ananias, the high priest, God shall smite thee, thou whited wall. Whited wall, of course, hypocrisy, Pharisaism, mask, cover-up. 435, 932, truth, life, and love. Christ as judge instead of medicine as judge alone have jurisdiction over man. Truth, life, and love, the true medicine, the operation of the law of spirit, the law of truth, life, and love, the law of health, truth, manifesting the deathless, the law of deathless life, fulfilled in the law of unself love. Love, the law of health, manifesting the law of deathless life, is fulfilled in the law of unself love. So 436, health laws being the principle, that is to say, the eyewitness saw mortal man performing the good deeds for which he is now sentenced to die. So that health laws act against mortal man in the interests of personal sense a murderer. So don't let's be the victim of our own murderous personal sense. Cain, the murderer of his brother, was always trying to acquire, to get. Our own personal sense and false belief in material laws of health is what would murder us. I have a mind of my own, a will of my own, a brain of my own. Anything a will of my own. No, no. It all belongs to God. That's life, and the other is murder, personal sense. So that materia medica and physiology, Christian Science continues, in their effort to save mortal man from arrest, did the very opposite of this by bringing with them the sheriff, Fear, who handcuffed him. And then the jury of 12 mortal minds, this mass belief in the validity of medicine's health laws, declared the prisoner guilty.